fucking happy hour. Carl fucking Frisch is live in studio, imported from D.C.
That's right. Yeah. This moonshine you made is fantastic.
Okay, you are one of our many people that don't drink for happy hour, so Sean and Aaron and I, we're making up for it, right?
Yeah. I drink plenty for a while.
You need to get up closer on the mic, on the phallic object.
Like it's Evan.
Thank you. That's his boyfriend, everybody. Okay, so Carl Frisch. Aaron's help. Aaron's your fluffer.
I know. Usually don't need help with it.
He's cute. Okay, so wait. How long have you been sober?
4 years today.
Oh, 4 years. Oh, today.
Yeah.
What a perfect day to break your... No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Do a happy
hour. We do
hour.
Not want to be a bad influence.
I may never leave that room.
So what happened? What was your worst drunk story that led to this? What was your rock bottom, Carl Frisch? I don't mean to say power bottom. Sorry. I feel like we've gotten off on the
For
wrong
me, it
foot.
Was an inside thing. It wasn't an outside thing. My life was, on the outside, perfectly fine. But I did not want my drinking to continue the way that it was continuing.
And how was that? Were you in D.C. then?
Yeah, I lived in D.C.
For people who don't know, you're a big fancy D.C. You've been a Democratic strategist for years.
Yeah, and Republican before that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. I don't care how long you stopped drinking. How long did you stop being a fucking asshole?
I actually stopped drinking twice. And the first time I was like 22, and it was right when I was coming out. So it was actually probably a good time not to drink because I could have gotten in a lot of trouble.
Wow.
So wait.
You came out as gay and as a Republican?
I came out to a few... Here's the story. Okay. I knew I was gay the whole time.
Wait, the whole time?
Yes.
Okay.
High school girlfriends.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I knew it all.
I did a lot of dry humping to bread with my high school boyfriend.
Yeah, I'm sure he loved it.
Yeah, well, you know. my Republican dad, not so much when he walked in.
Oh my! I would go, you know, spend the weekend at like a female friend's house in high school, and my parents were probably so happy.
They're like, oh, thank God. No. Thank God he's not that way.
So I knew, but I thought I could just like keep it, you know, I'd get the wife, we'd run for office together, hopefully her family would have money. And in fact, a girl I dated in college when I was on the board of the College Republicans in California, her father owned like a NASCAR. And I'm like, this is the one.
This is fantastic. Thank God.
But do you know that when you're in a relationship.
I'll never have to shore my dipstick. This is going to be fantastic.
When you're in a relationship, you have to like want to talk to them and hang out with them.
Yeah.
Weird, right?
It shouldn't feel like a chore. And so I knew eventually I figured out that it was never going to go away. And then at a certain point, I guess... It was like 1998. I'd been working in politics for 2 years at that point.
We were in mid Clinton blowjob.
Yeah.
And you were like, can't be anti-blowjob. I can't.
But then it occurred to me. So the reason that I was staying closeted is because I was going to be president one day. Mm-hmm. And
I'm still down with that.
Where do we sign up? I'm like, how could I be president if I was gay? And so I don't know.
Ask Aunt Fancy. Right. James Buchanan.
Right. At a certain point, it was like, well, that's probably never going to happen regardless of if you're gay or not.
Right.
So do you want to be happy in life?
Right.
Or do you want to stay in the closet? Because then it was like, what if you become a congressman or an assembly member as a Republican from California?
Right.
That means you have no upward trajectory whatsoever because nobody's getting elected here that's a Republican.
Right.
So at a certain point, it was just like, I guess I should come out and try and be happy. So I told a couple friends, my best friend Portia from high school and college, I wrote her a letter. I was drunk.
Little testers.
I wrote her a letter. Really, you know, like every gay movie from the 80s and 90s, you know. It's really depressing.
I'm your ducky. Listen, I want to tell you something.
And I put it in the mailbox at this campaign headquarters.
I'm a pole smoker. Oh, I'm sorry. No? Hang on. I'm drunk.
Of course, afterwards, she's like, we just thought you were asexual. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
But I put the wrong zip code on the letter. Uh-oh. So... For 2 weeks, she didn't call, and she was up at Berkeley, and I'm like,
and you're like, oh, she hates me.
Ruined it. She said she was so liberal, and then she called, and she didn't mention it, and I'm like, what the hell? And then another day later, she called back, and she's like, you put the wrong zip code on the envelope, you asshole.
You fucking asshole. You fucking pole smoker.
And then her college roommate came out.
It's not 90069, you fucking...
Then her college roommate came out, and I said, Portia, you're like zero to fag hag in like 2.5 weeks. But I didn't come out to anybody else after that for like a year. And then I went and worked for McCain, which didn't make a lot of sense to my friends that knew I was gay. But I,
right.
my whole life to that point had been opportunities in Republican politics where I was like, this will never happen
Wait,
to me again.
You're from here. Where were you born? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Westchester, which is between El Segundo and Marina Del Rey.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It used to be really blue collar, and now it's the house I grew up in is over $1 million, and it's not that fancy.
Wow.
But
welcome to California real estate.
Exactly. Yep. So I grew up there, and my dad was a cop, and my mom was a waitress.
My daddy was a cop on the south side of Chicago.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, back in the bad old days. It's not my time. It's your time. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My dad was an LA County sheriff, and his first beat was
West Hollywood.
Yeah, he worked. At the station over there, they used to count the gay guys going into the bars until they reached the fire code, then they'd shut it down. Oh, the good old days.
Oh, the good old days. So did you perceive your dad as homophobic?
He is, and was.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like he's like saying bad stuff to my face. But
right.
When I came out, it was, we'll always love you. If you ever need money, we just don't want you to bring in the fags over. Which was improvement because when my sister came out to him.
Wait a minute. Wait, there's no genetic component, but wait a minute, hold your calls.
And my little sister is a makeup artist in Hollywood. So you've got two gay people right off the bat, and then one that's like gay adjacent.
Right. My nephew's bi, there's something.
So my sister came out when I was in high school. She's a couple years older than me. And their reaction kept me in the closet for a little bit longer. my mother gave me a card when I came out, and this is pre-Hallmark greeting cards.
Oh, is there a coming out card now?
There is now.
Oh, then there probably wasn't.
But there was not.
They're probably a get back in faggot. That was it?
Yeah. It was sappy, but that was nice. My dad didn't handle it well. He was a cop for 35 years.
Oh, boy.
As if that's an excuse, but...
Oh, dear.
Quintessential cop.
Yeah.
Gruff, you know.
Wait, so what... What was his reaction? I hate to ask. I'm sure this is painful.
So I couldn't bring myself to tell them, so I wrote a letter. Oh, I wrote a lot of letters when I was
to whom
out.
It may concern.
And after that one, I just emailed everybody in one email because I'm like, if I keep on telling people this is not a big deal, mm-hmm. and then I have to break it to them individually, that kind of makes it a big deal.
Right.
So after I came out to my parents and one or two other friends, I emailed everybody and was like, cat's out of the bag, gay.
Right. And not in the pussy kind of way, but the different cats.
So I had moved back from working on McCain, was living at my parents' house in Santa Clarita because they retired away from the ocean.
Right.
I don't know.
Let's get farther away from the ocean, somewhere hotter.
Yeah. Dirt road, and more middle horrible. Of nowhere, plenty of space to doomsday prep. You know, the bunker is secure.
Yes.
But so I was staying out there while I looked for a job, which would end up being my first Democratic job.
Right.
So I wrote this letter, and I went and researched at the library, what book should I give my parents? The problem was is that all the gay books in the 90s that were out were all AIDS-centric.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And if you're trying to assuage your parents' fears, that's not the message to give them.
Right.
Right.
So a new book had come out by somebody that was at the Kinsey Institute, and I grabbed it, and I read it from front to back, and it was pretty good. So I gave it to them, How to Deal with Your Kid When They're Gay or something like that. And I don't think they ever read the book, but they read the letter because the letter was gone when I came home that day. But I didn't talk to my dad for 2 weeks, even though we lived in the same house.
Oh, boy.
And then finally he's like, come here, let's talk. I'm like, okay. He's like, we got your letter. I'm like, oh good.
Oh, then
I was afraid he got lost.
I have the right zip code. Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a problem with mail.
Not that kind.
Yeah. Well, not anymore.
But the regular mail.
Right. And so he was like, you know, when your sister, you know, I'm old fashioned.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll always love you. We'll be there, you know, if you need money or whatever. But we just, you know, we're old fashioned. We don't want you bringing your fag friends over.
He did not say that.
Yeah.
Did he say fag friends?
Yeah. For me, it was fag friends. For my sister, it was dyke friends.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, at least he was
updating
his lingo.
Your mother and I, we've always given you wall-to-wall carpeting. We just don't want that.
My mother was a high-end waitress. My mother was a cocktail waitress on the Sunset Strip when my parents met. When my father, with his mustache as a cop in the 1970s, was working in West Hollywood.
Oh, my God.
They didn't know any gay
people. So village people, so gay, too.
My mother was surrounded by gay men her entire career as a waitress in Century City in Hollywood. And,
right.
So she knew plenty of gay people. So it was like anything. I knew from listening to, you know, talk shows and stuff like that, that I had to give them time to come out, too. And so... I gave them a long time
before
bringing it up again. And now there's just, it's a detente, you know, we don't talk about it. I don't have a terribly close relationship with them. And I never, I thought when I came out that that would fix that, but it, it doesn't.
Well, we had the same background. I mean, I thought I was Republican too. Yeah. I mean, I voted for Reagan because I was like, I don't know, dad's paying for USC
nice mask
and I guess
wear.
I should, I don't, right. I don't know. I guess we're Republican. We get Christmas cards from the Nixons. I don't really. But, you know, that's the thing is, like, I don't know about you, but I wasn't political at all. I was a fucking USC theater student. Yeah. I was going to be Carol Burnett. I didn't really think about it. And then when I started thinking about it, I remember for me, the turning point was that Pat Buchanan speech at that convention that was so mean spirited and homophobic. And I was like, wow, I remember my dad's party being mean like that. And
mine was Matt Shepard. Because my sister was in the Air Force and she was stationed at F.E. Warren in Wyoming. And she had met him several times. They'd gone to Colorado together to go to the gay bars in Fort Collins. And she called when he was killed because she was upset. And she knew that I was gay at this point. And maybe she did. I don't remember. And no, she didn't, because my reaction to her was, I'm sorry.
Oh, here's just an interesting news item for you, Carl.
So not like a, she told me... was expecting empathy, and I didn't have a drop of empathy. It's kind of the thing that Republicans do, right? They don't have empathy. And it took me coming out.
How did you grow that in a lab?
It took me coming out and identifying as somebody who doesn't have it the easiest to see that lots of people don't have it easy.
Because a lot of Republicans, like, they don't, they're not, they don't have empathy till it happens to fucking them.
Right.
Till they have a gay kid. Or
they have somebody
that needs stem cell research. Right.
Or yeah. So I initially, I was.
Or what?
Health insurance.
Yes. Right.
Initially, I would describe myself as like a, I'm a social liberal and an economic conservative. And then eventually it became like, I realized I can't pay for my social liberal with their Republican economics. And I, you know, I feel sorry for, I even feel sorry for conservatives who have it bad. I mean, I have a heart now and I didn't have it before. Before I switched parties, my politics was all about me.
Yeah.
It was all about me. It was about how I was going to maneuver and manipulate my way into becoming a politician.
Yeah.
And eventually my happiness became far more important.
But when did you decide you weren't a Republican? Like, what age when you were saying, like, you, was it related to your gayness or not?
Ish.
Ish.
Well, in high school, I knew I was, at least I thought I might be gay. And I was one of those, you know, really popular kids who hung out and volunteered on campaigns.
Right.
And if I ditched school, I would volunteer at the Republican headquarters. I was really cool.
Nerd!
Yes. So I knew that it was like a cover, but I also knew that I didn't believe half the stuff that they said. What I really loved was making liberals uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And being, you know... The whole thing that Trump does about the we're not politically correct, conservatives find the ruffling of liberal feathers to be the funniest thing in the world, which is why Ann Coulter's popular, which is why Donald Trump gets away with all this politically incorrect stuff, because they feel like they can't do that in their own person. They can't really say how they feel in real life, so somebody else is doing it for
them.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, it's okay to say faggot now. Woohoo!
Right. Yeah. Right. It doesn't mean I hate gay people. I don't think they should have any rights.
Right.
But I don't hate them.
Right. By the way, I'm not going to say the N-word, but I feel like it's okay to say faggot because I'm gay.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking
Those are the rules.
I'm talking about cigarettes and a bag
Britain.
Of sticks.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's right.
But I don't think I thought I would ever come out until I was out of high school. And when I went to work for McCain, I was in South Carolina, and this is also when I picked up smoking, was in South Carolina.
Oh, dear.
They put chocolates on
Both
pillows
kinds
at
of smoking.
Hotels.
Pole and otherwise.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. I started going to gay clubs in Columbia, South Carolina. My first, growing up 15 minutes from West Hollywood, my first gay club was in Columbia, South Carolina. It was two blocks from my apartment. It had a giant Superman on the front.
Gay Mecca.
Ripping open his shirt to reveal a pink triangle, and I couldn't find it. I was like, where's the gay bar in this town with the giant gay Superman on front? And I go in, and finally somebody on AOL told me about it. And I go in, and this lady, this gruff lesbian behind the plexiglass, is like, do you have your membership card? I said, my what now? In the South, you had to have a membership card so that they could keep the hooligans out.
Right.
And so she's like, where are you from? I said, Los Angeles. She said, come on in. And so I
started. That's the only card you need, sir.
Right. Yeah. But I would tell people my middle name because I didn't want them to know who I was.
Right.
Because, you know. I was so important at 21 years of age.
They're calling from the morality police in South Carolina now that you're telling the story.
I said I was Vincent. My name is Vince.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Nice name.
And then I got drunk and was introducing myself to somebody, and in front of like some people that were now my friends, and I introduced myself as Carl, and they're like, "What? Who's Carl?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm never talking to any of you ever again."
Carl's Vincent's boyfriend. What?
We look alike. But I knew by about halfway through the McCain campaign that I was never going to work for another Republican. Yeah. In South Carolina, they talk about how bad and dirty that 2000 primary was, yeah, with McCain and Bush. We were just as awful on the McCain side to the Bush people. And there's this magazine called Southern Partisan. It's a virulently racist magazine. It's published by the Quinn family, who ran McCain's campaign,
yeah,
in South Carolina. And the headquarters in South Carolina was based out of the Quinn's office. The stuff that I saw there, the horrible things that I saw there, the things that were said, when I first started going out with people after like a long day's work, everybody smoked. So I decided I would smoke too. And I bought long cigarettes, like 100s, because I thought, like, economical, like, you'll save money and it'll be longer.
Like the old movie Dames.
Exactly.
Long filter.
I have one of those little sticks with the cigarette on the end. And this state legislator, whose father is Mr. Quinn, was like, "What are you smoking those fag cigarettes for?" And I'm like, "The fag cigarettes? Like, oh." He's like, "They're super long." I'm like, "I know, they were on sale. I don't know." Whatever. And so I knew that it was over. I was never going to work in Republican politics again. I didn't know that I'd work in politics again. And so after that, I drank a lot, and then I moved home and
moved
came
home to here out here
moved back to Santa moved to my parents' place in Santa Clarita, and tried to make sense of what was going on in my life. So I stopped drinking, and then I worked on my first Democrat. I was Jim Hahn's finance or a field director for mayor in Los Angeles in 2001, and we won. I'd never won in a Republican race before. My first Democratic
like
race
winning.
Out the box was winning. And then I was professionally out for the first time too, which was really weird. Everybody I worked with knew I was gay. And then from there, I just kind of kept working in liberal politics and causes, and eventually made my way back out east.
Yeah. I mean, but people say that to me. I'm like, not only is this not my dad and Goldwater's party anymore, this isn't Reagan's party.
No.
It isn't even George Bush's party.
George H.W. Bush could never have been elected, ever. I mean, his father started Planned Parenthood, for Christ's sake.
I know.
That used to be a thing.
Barry Goldwater on the Senate floor in the 80s was like, "You don't have to be straight, you just have to shoot straight,"
right,
about gays in the military. I'm like, what the fuck has happened in
Republican
politics?
Women, the wives of politicians, used to raise money for the Planned Parenthoods in their communities because they thought this was the way that they could help underprivileged women.
Right, which is true.
And now, it's the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
It's
no, sick. I what is happening now, Carl? What the fuck is going to happen to this party? I mean, seriously, my dad and Goldwater, if they don't, some reality show, fucking carnival barker is the front runner. I mean, seriously,
I think what happened is, you know, every time a new group of people comes into the country, part of the country that's dying off goes crazy. It just happens to be
right. The old white angry people.
Right. It just happens to be. Well, sometimes it was white people moving in, and they're like, "Oh, those Irish." But now it just happens that all those old white guys are in the Republican Party, so it's on full display in one political party.
Yeah.
And you know, they brought it on themselves.
Yeah. No, they did. They built this. But now what? Now what the fuck's going
to happen? They pay a lot of lip service to the things that they need to do to fix themselves, but they don't do it. They have a choice, right? Change now or change later. Both are difficult, and they won't make a choice.
As an alcoholic, you would know this, that Donald Trump is saying what every Republican says after four drinks, right?
Maybe two.
You're just like, oh, my God.
You're not supposed
to say that out fucking loud.
No. It has been fun to watch because they deserve it.
Yeah.
They deserve what they're getting. They have preached hatred for so long. It's about freaking time. But then, you know, when I finally became a liberal and started identifying with liberal politics and had empathy for the first time and actually cared about the things that I was choosing to do with my life as opposed to what I could do to, you know, become a politician. You know, I started to enjoy life outside of work for the first time too, and that was fantastic.
Are you referring to Evan?
Well, that's
your boyfriend.
Recent-ish. That's only 2.5 years ago.
I know. Well,
certainly. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's fantastic.
You're like you're a suburban house husband now.
That's right. And he's a teacher. So he's in Atlanta right now with all of his choir kids. I can't imagine being on a trip with 100 teenagers.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Thankfully, we're not having children. We're not those gays.
You're not those gays.
He teaches them. We don't need them.
Yeah. That's what I remember. I can't remember which lesbian comedian did that. She's like, that was the whole point of being a lesbian, is you didn't fucking have to have children. What the fuck is with the lesbians with children?
I don't want a stroller. I don't want a car seat. I have nieces and nephews. That's about good enough for me.
Yeah, we just had Greg Proops on, and he did a whole anti, you know, procreating rant. I don't know what's happening, but yeah.
Oh, because
it's not the right. I mean, I wish a lot of people shouldn't be parents that are.
Yep.
So you're like, fair. A lot more fucking people ought to choose not to, you know? Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't do that in the 70s because I probably wouldn't have been here.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But
your parents, exhibit A and B.
Yeah. I mean, they did something right. All the kids turned out fantastic.
What tell us about your siblings?
I have three sisters. So I have a half sister who's the oldest
right.
from my mother's first marriage. And she has a master's and she lives in Texas, has two kids.
Yeah.
Married a cowboy. Grew up in L.A.
Where have all the cowboys gone? To
she lives
Carl
in
Fish's sister.
Nazareth, so. Texas, which is where Jesus is from.
Of course.
Population 400.
Is he from Texas? I didn't know that.
Nazareth,
Texas. I don't read the Bible. Do you, Sean?
It's fantastic. It's very cool where they live. It's very flat.
I hear it's the best book next to Art of the Deal.
Yes. Actually, I believe that the Art of the Deal is based on the Bible. I might have that backwards. and she's got two kids that are in high school. And then my immediate older sister, there's three of us from my parents.
Yeah.
And the immediate older is my lesbian sister who is she works in security at a high school in Long Beach and was in the Air Force for 20 years. And,
wow.
And then I have a little sister who just had a kid in September and she is a makeup artist in Hollywood and her fiance is a big time showrunner for FX Network and has a couple TV shows.
Can I tell you a fun fact? Okay, so we are taping this, although it's going to air later, on the day that Prince died. Mm-hmm. One of my long ago exes was Prince's gym teacher in Minnesota. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
We're all Prince doing our one play, degree of Prince.
Prince doesn't play kickball.
Prince does not. No.
Prince is
he
not.
Probably had an entourage then.
But he had kick ass gym shorts. You know it. Like purple.
Right? Purple. She was fantastic. Like, you know what? Okay, if you don't want to
smear the what?
It's been a fuck-ass year, man, hasn't it?
Everybody,
for politics, for music. Jesus Christ.
It feels like there's some kind of, like, musician-killing virus going on.
What
like,
the fuck?
God.
I feel like what's weird about it is that we've only heard about this morning, so by the time people hear this, they're going to know a lot more than we know
right,
now.
Right, than we know.
Right now,
so
all we know
fucking
is that,
assholes, no matter what we say.
All we know is that they found him in an elevator.
Right.
So we have no idea why. We might find out by the time you hear this that he was murdered. Who knows?
Yeah, good God.
Murder?
Yeah.
I just like saying that. I don't know why. Carl, I think, you know, you and I have a lot in common. Like we came from Republican backgrounds. We were gay. And I thought like, and we talked, we won't talk about that, but Sean and I have talked, we've talked privately, but about, you know, all of us have had an interesting path. Mm-hmm. I was with someone and I've talked about this on the air, but I would never say who. I would never do anything to hurt her. But that wasn't comfortable. And, you know, we're in 2016 and marriage equality is legal. But, you know, you look at all this backlash that's happening in all these states. And, you know, I very personally feel this because, you know, when you love someone, I was protecting her for almost 3 years because I thought she was like, you know, you had a long path to coming out, which is true, to telling my family, to coming out publicly, whatever. But I just am like, well, I'm 54 and it's 2016. And marriage equality is here. But, you know, so I was trying to be sympathetic to that. But at some point, as you said, and you did it too, living in the closet is incredibly damaging.
And when you date somebody who is, you're brought back in.
Yeah. Well, no, I came out, which was, then I went back in for someone else for 3 years to protect her. And I think it is incredibly damaging to both people to not live in truth, in authenticity.
And sometimes the best thing you can do when somebody who is in the closet wants to be with you is to not be with them. It can be the thing that brings them out.
Well, we tried that.
Yeah.
I started dating someone else. She came back.
Right.
But you're right. If they're still not ready, if there is, you know, and I think that you and I might think like, oh my God, in 2016, really? But you have to understand that stuff is still out there.
Sure.
That sort of fear and, you know, that it's going to hurt your career. Right. I mean,
that's what petrified me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
When I figured out that's what I was, I was like, well, fuck it. Like, my life is over. I'm never going to do anything with my life.
But in our case, if somebody doesn't identify as gay, like, you know, that's why I've always said there is all those letters, which I never understand.
Right.
LGBT, BLT, so whatever it is, you know, whatever.
Yeah, sandwiches.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I mean, there are, though, and I've always said that I think sexuality is a continuum. There's, you know, gay, straight. There's people that have been everywhere and in between. And I think that, you know, like Sean, millennial stem cells. Mm-hmm. Like, the younger you get, the more accepting they are of that, yeah. of fluidity and mm-hmm. whatever the fuck. Like, who cares? Like, okay, you were married to a man, now you're in love with a woman. Like, this is... But, you know, I think that's... I hope that's the next front in this.
I do, too. I think it's a different path for everybody. I look at Evan's kids in high school. There are so many of them are out, and at the same time, he sees a lot of them where he's like, I know you are... Sit down, girl. Let's talk.
Right.
You know, they're quoting RuPaul, but they're not out. So I think it's different for everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, certainly I wish that I'd come out earlier. Evan came out when he was 15.
Wow.
You know, he's 5 years younger than me. So he was, you know, in high school in the 90s, too. But I couldn't imagine. I don't know what I would have done with myself if I had come out when I was, you know, 15 years old.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember
my parents weren't
case.
Religious, so well, I mean, it wasn't like they were going to put me in church or anything.
In my case, I mean, I think sometimes women in show business, I know Sean's like, really, you old hag? But I got marketed, you know, as this sexy whatever for men. And whether it was my late night TV show, even when this radio show started, it was like Making Men Rise in the Morning or my ads. And, you know, you have nothing to do with that marketing. It's like my friend Shelley Wright. Like, you know, country music.
Right.
I mean, of course she was marketed as this sexy singer for men, for straight men. And so you have nothing to do with that. But, you know, at the same time, of course, way back when I thought, oh, this is going to hurt my, you know.
And people certainly send signals of what they expect out of somebody for sure.
Right. You're like, but I remember one of my program directors was like, Steph, what exactly about you with another hot woman did you think was going to turn men off? Because your audience has only gotten bigger since.
Yeah.
But there are still people that are scared, like my ex, who's still scared.
There are people that are scared that have perfectly accepting, loving families.
Right. Yep.
You know, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, my biggest fear was that I was never going to do anything with my life and that nobody would like me anymore.
Right.
You know, that didn't happen. But you can't, nobody can common sense somebody into reality. You know, anybody could have talked to me about what I should do and it never would have sunk in until it happened.
Right. Yeah.
Until the first time I told somebody and it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember somebody telling me it was like being with a married person.
Yeah.
You know, my friend was like, okay, so she was flying here every 2-3 weeks going, oh, you know, this is the ring I'm making for you. This is the dress I'm going to wear. We're going to get engaged to Christmas. And they're like, she probably didn't even tell her family you're back together. Probably didn't even tell her family you're together.
For the straight people at home.
Right.
Let me explain why that's a big deal.
Right.
Because
because you go, that's what married people that hear, like, oh, I can't tell my wife before Christmas, or I can't do this.
I mean, the preparation stuff you were talking about.
Or my, like, yeah.
For gay people that didn't grow up in a time when marriage was ever going to be a thing in our lives, mm-hmm. having conversations about it is not like straight couples having conversations about marriage after they've been dating for a couple weeks,
right.
or whatever, because that's always been part of your equation. When you start talking about marriage as a gay couple, it's a real conversation.
Right.
I never thought that marriage would be an option growing up. I didn't
think
it would be. I never thought it would be legal.
And maybe you and I have had some like sympathy for someone like Hillary or Obama or whatever when people go, they didn't evolve soon enough. I'm like, I'm gay. And I didn't think marriage equality was, I was always like, oh, it's fine, whatever, civil unions. Like, I never thought in my lifetime this would happen.
We accepted piecemeal for a generation because we thought that's all we'd ever get.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that when I first started thinking about being gay, there were a lot of people who weren't for marriage. There were a lot of people that were just starting to push on the marriage front.
Right.
But it was never part of the equation for me. It never occurred to me that I would, you know, a straight kid grows up and they think, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to get a good job, I'm going to have a career, I'm going to fall in love, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have kids, one day I'll be a grandparent.
Right.
My conversation like that ended at, I'll fall in love, maybe. You know, it never went beyond
me too.
That. And that's like half a life. And so now you have a generation of kids that are growing up where that is entirely in the realm of possibilities. And that's probably the biggest thing that changes with marriage equality.
How long have your parents been married?
40 years.
My parents too, until my dad died. And my sister and brother-in-law just celebrated their 49th anniversary. So that's the other thing is I had that.
Yeah.
That's fucked me up. Like and they both got engaged on the third date, were happily married for whatever. That's where I thought my life was going to be. I mean, my ex, I thought, was the love of my life. I thought, okay, I waited a long time. Marriage wasn't legal. Now we're going to do this. So I was devastated, and I still am. I still miss her every day. And I still, you know, when you have that time, you go, oh, maybe it's me and this and that. Even though you go, I acceded to living in the closet and all the stress that went with. And, you know, long distance and whatever else it is. But I you know, I think you're right. Like, we're not in the same era as our parents. Mm-mm. And yet I expect, or I, at least I still want, or I still believe in that 40-year conversation.
Yeah. I never thought that I'd fall in love with anybody, let alone... By the time I was done with my 20s, I was like, I'm going to be that old, single, gay dude who's the life of the party, but that was going to be it for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Evan's the best thing that's happened to me. I never thought that would
happen. Where'd you meet him? What happened?
We met at a gay bar in D.C. called the Green Lantern, which is commonly known as the Green Latrine because it's filthy, but it's fun.
What's not fun that's not filthy? Come on.
Yeah. You can drink shirtless on Thursdays for free. That's the kind of bar it is.
That's every Thursday for me, right, Sean? You come over by accident.
Yep.
You're like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
It's my boss's tits. Jesus. Sorry.
All right.
That's the paid webcam subscription.
Right.
That's different. That's Def After Dark.
But we became friends on Facebook that night, and then we didn't talk to each other for 2 years. No, and then we matched on OkCupid. And I'm like, I guess it was like late December, early January, because he was still on winter break from teaching. And I'm like, do you want to get lunch? We know each other on Facebook. Let's get lunch. And so we went and had lunch. And then, you know, 3 months later, we were an item.
Wow.
And that was over 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yay.
Happily ever after. And now I live in the suburbs.
Yeah, you are. Now you're like a...
I never
now
thought
you're
I
like,
would.
You're like, you know, gay. What's his name? Griswold.
I tell my friends, most of my friends that are like, I would never date somebody in Virginia. I'm like, that's why you're single, honey.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like, you put up an art. In D.C., though, you're not talking about a huge distance. You're talking. D.C. is only 11 square miles.
Right, right.
It's not that big of a city in the first place. So people really cordon themselves off to like one neighborhood of one quadrant of the city,
yeah,
and their life is confined to like 3 square miles. I'm like, yes. I like to have a little bit more in my life. So yeah, now I commute from the suburbs.
Yeah, into DC.
Into DC
to be fancy,
right?
As you do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's. I mean, I don't know if I. You know, you were bringing up like being gay and AIDS. And my high school boyfriend died of AIDS.
Yeah.
So he had to, you know, come out to his family and tell them he had AIDS at the same time. And
an entire generation of people did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, oddly enough, if there's a silver lining to the AIDS epidemic, it's that a generation of men died coming out to their families and normalized the idea that everyday people could be gay.
And he had a football player, you know, brother that was like, AIDS, what are you, faggot? And, you know, I remember we had drinks, we were in college, and he's like, I'm sick. And I was like, you know, of course, that time you're like, what do you mean? You know, And, you know, and of course, we always thought that we only like dry humped not to completion because we were Catholic.
Right.
We're like, oh, I see. We didn't, because we were probably both gay. Okay.
That's where the term petting comes from.
But he was the best man I ever knew, Carl. He just, you know, amazing. I mean, I got to see him and his boyfriend. They got married long before it was ever legal, right before he died.
Yeah.
And they came to see me and, I remember his boyfriend, when I called, like almost before he died, he said, wow, you must rate because Tom can't talk to anybody. He can barely talk. He wants to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And he said, on his hospital room, he has pictures of your ads for your late night show. And he says to every nurse that comes in here, that's my girlfriend. And he was like my biggest fan and the best guy I ever knew. And I thought, like, you're right. Like, those of us that were formed in a certain era mm-hmm. have a... You know, AIDS isn't some sort of abstract thing to us. It's we lost the people that were closest to us.
An entire generation, like people don't, it's like just thrown away language at this point. Yeah. An entire generation, what does that mean? Imagine everyone you know dying.
Right.
And nobody doing anything about it.
Right.
Everyone. I mean, David Mixner, who's one of the civil rights icons of the gay community, his partner died. And everybody in their social circle died. There are men who were involved in like civil rights for the gay movement in the 80s who will tell you that they knew hundreds of people who died. Hundreds. Some people knew thousands
Michael
of people.
Michael Bennett, who did Chorus Line and whatever from Buffalo, from my hometown.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think of the creative impact, the people, just people that we knew, and we loved.
And it wasn't, so 96 is when, I believe it might have been 95, protease inhibitors came around. And that yeah. started saving lives.
Right. That's the cocktail, way before Tommy, the year
I graduated from high school. So I grew up in an era where not only was I figuring out that I was gay, but I was petrified that it was going to kill me.
Yeah.
Because everybody was dying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the new generation, they're not the kids today. You know, they have every hope in the world that their life will turn out to be whatever the hell they want it to turn out to be.
Right.
And they're not going to die as a result of who they are and who they love.
Right. Yeah. I remember, Tommy told me the first time he had sex with a guy was his freshman year in college.
And of course, too.
And of course, when we've left each other at the end of high school, we're going to be together forever. We're going to be, I love you. We're going to be.
Write letters.
And I was like, when he told me, I was like, wait a minute. You fucked a guy. I thought you were in love with me. But he apparently got it from the first guy he ever had sex with. His freshman. This was in like, we graduated in 79. We graduated college in 83. So it was somewhere in there in 80, the first people that got it. And, you know, I remember at the time, that's part of maybe, I don't know about you, but the politicized me. But I always said, like, you know, in Reagan's era, I'm like, if AIDS had made rich white Republican men's dicks fall off, mm-hmm. they would have cured that shit overnight, man.
They didn't start really doing anything until women who were straight started getting it, and a lot of people with blood transfusions were getting it. Young people were getting it. There wasn't a lot of movement by people that were not gay, other than the gay people's friends, to help people until it started affecting everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, and it's so, you know, I know it's so funny to the kids. To the kids that are listening now, like Sean. But it's true. I mean, I think politics and all that, it takes on a different prism when you've lived through certain things. And even, you know, when we've talked about the Clintons, you know, mm-hmm. and how they were just so fucking hunted in the 90s yeah. over every fucking thing. Kids now go, oh, well, she's corrupt or whatever. I'm like, no, none of those fucking things came to anything. They were all taxpayer-funded bullshit that came to nothing.
And they didn't just do it once.
And I remember, Carl, I was hosting Equal Time on CNBC with Baby Cannon at the time during the Clinton impeachment. And I remember I wasn't out yet, but it was personal to me when I said, private life means private.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not voting for Bill Clinton for husband. I'm voting for president. But I meant that in a way. Of course, at the time, that was more personal, sure. but I just was like, but it really was true. It was like, it's not our fucking business what their private life is or what their arrangement is or what the fuck's happened.
In 98.
And most of the country agreed with me that we shouldn't be impeaching the president over his private life.
They still believe it. And it probably did a lot of good for the country, frankly.
Right.
Because it normalized that stuff. And in 98, I was working for Jim Nussle. He was a Republican congressman from Iowa. He was the House budget chairman. And I remember when they started hearing about Monica.
Yeah.
Because he said, it sounds like we finally got him. Because it wasn't about, you know, finding things out and then doing something about it.
Yep.
Right. It was about looking for something. Mm-hmm. So they went after everything that they could possibly think of. And their own investigators would say that there was no there. So they hire a new investigator, and they do it over and over and over again.
No, I'm going, if most of us, I mean, honestly, most of us, if we were investigating about our private life, would probably lie in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, you go, really? I mean, you know, the fact that he was being questioned about his private life, and, you know, you can say whatever you want about it, but you go, it was not relevant to his presidency. It was a totally different witch hunt.
You know, if you look in Republican circles, they talk about who he's sleeping with today. I don't care. I don't care anything about, that's their relationship. It has nothing to do with my...
Right.
And I think it's bore out that it doesn't have anything to do with the country.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say the same thing about a Republican politician who wasn't a holy roller. You know, the only time I have a problem
with it. What have you heard about the Ted Cruz thing?
I think a lot of women I know
do not think that people would fuck him. I mean, I can believe that he would pay someone to fuck him, but I cannot believe there are five women that fuck him for free.
I mean, they obviously didn't see the video of him from high school. Because if they saw that, there's no way they slept with him. When he's making jokes about wanting to be a film director so they could see boobs. I mean, come on. I would play the longest game of Risk to not sleep with him.
Seriously, is the DC Madam thing a thing?
I think it might be.
Oh, Jesus. No, I can believe he had to pay people to fuck him.
Look at the people who were doing it, right? So you had, what's his name from Louisiana that was doing it so that he could have his diaper fun?
David Vitter.
So, you know, I think those powerful people... sometimes they do that kind of stuff. both because they think they can get away with it, and also because maybe they can do stuff there that they can't do with the missus.
How could it make him any more repugnant than he already is?
He'll find a way. Like, he's like, you know, a chameleon in politics. He will find a way to creep you out. I mean, everything, yeah. He just oozes creepiness.
Right? What's going to happen on the Republican side?
Well, a friend of mine asked me today, do you think it'll be Trump and Cruz together? I said, oh, please. Please let that happen.
So vomitous. So vomitous.
Fantastic. I honestly don't know. They cannot not nominate Donald Trump at this point. If they don't nominate him, they kill their party. If they do nominate him, they probably kill their party. I mean, I think they can recover from him being the nominee.
It couldn't happen to a nicer party.
But it's going to be hard. They can't recover from him not being the nominee. Because they'd lose. If they lost, it might be the best thing to happen for them if you know, he takes that chunk of the party out of the party.
Right.
Because that's what's holding them back. Mm-hmm. That's the group that is, you know, making them say all the anti-gay stuff and, you know, the borderline and outright racist stuff.
Right, right.
So if they can get rid of that element, it might be like pulling the Band-Aid off and they can maybe one day recover. But until they do that, it's either hurt now or hurt later. Right now they're hurting later because they think if we hold on to this 30% of our party, that's crazy, we can win a general election.
Yeah.
If without it, we can't. But you can't survive in the future with that part.
Yeah.
That part will make you unelectable.
No, I mean, I wonder, I mean, honestly, you know, you came from a Republican family. I wonder what happens to my dad and Goldwater's party. Does this just fucking...
been there for a while.
Yeah. My 93-year-old...
The Tea Party took it away.
Yeah. My 93-year-old Republican mom, because I think, you know, she just watches Fox News 24/7, and I was like, well, Mom, what do you think? She's like, oh, well, dear, I think Trump's the man to get the job done. I was like, oh. And then that was the end of the, like your family, that was the end of the political discussion. All right, Mom, let's just, you know what?
My father wanted me to tell him what happened in Baghdad on Hillary's watch. I said, you mean Benghazi, Dad? Yeah, Benghazi.
Yes, yes.
She killed
everyone in both places.
Yeah, and didn't send for help. I'm like, you're just rattling off the list of things that I can give you, but it doesn't matter. There are people that they want confirmation bias, so they pursue everything they can to underscore their beliefs. And if you prove to them that it's not true, well, then check the source.
Yeah, but, you know, Carl, that is love. That's what I think I hope will overcome is, you know, my mom's okay right now, but she was not doing okay when I got there.
Yeah.
And she burst into tears and I burst into tears. And I thought for 3 days I watched Fox News with her because I love her.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to talk about... You know, I was like, yes, Trump, fuck yeah. She's fucking 93, and guess what? She loves me.
Yeah.
She loves her gay daughter, and she's not for this stupid bill in North Carolina. Yeah. And, you know, maybe I'm, whatever, you know, with my ex or whatever. Like, maybe I am too much of a hopeless romantic, but I do think love wins.
I agree.
In the end.
I think it does. And sometimes it takes time. I have no doubt that my parents love me. I'm virtually certain they voted against Prop 8. They never came out and said it, but I'm sure that they did the right thing. Even if they voted for, John McCain at the same time that they voted for Prop 8. but, you know, it's nice that there is not a religious element to it. So the hatred does not come from a place of religion.
But don't you think that's when you look at all the polling, Carl, that's what moves things is hearts.
Yeah.
We talk about hearts and minds. It's that it's your son that you love. It's your daughter. It's your doctor. It's your lawyer. It's your friend. It's your, you know, someone that you love. I mean, when I go to Sexy Liberals, I'm like, I don't see all this hate and this whatever. I see people.
Right.
That when you talk to people face to face, you know, I mean, I think that because, you know, we've been told all this about the Hillary Bernie debacle. Oh, we're never going to heal again. And I'm like, well, Obama last time. And man, a huge percentage of Hillary people said they're never going to vote for him. And they did.
And they've defended him for 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll heal. This is healthy.
I'm as your foremost Obama apologist. I know what you're saying. Because I'm like, I have nothing to fucking apologize for.
No, I. The only part of this process that rubs me the wrong way is the small fraction of people who refuse to entertain anything that does not comport to defending their given choice. And what I mean by that is if Bernie says something that is just wrong, they will parrot the spin that any good campaign puts out there to cover up or to kind of try to move on. And if it's a Hillary person and perfect examples. Bernie on, you know, the New York Daily News thing, spinning that as it wasn't really that bad. It was pretty freaking awful. You can say that and still support your guy. Yeah. Hillary Clinton saying that Nancy Reagan and Ronald Reagan were good on the AIDS crisis. Pretty freaking awful.
Pretty fucking awful.
You can say you can say that was shitty and
you're
stupid.
Like, no, it was a first lady trying to say something nice about another first lady on the day she died. But she meant Alzheimer's and stem cells. She didn't mean AIDS. Right. That was fucking awful.
And it doesn't doesn't make you any less of a Hillary supporter to call her on it and say you need to think about that before you say it again. It doesn't make you any less of a Bernie supporter to say that was a bad interview. Your staff needs to prep you better.
Yeah. No, and I've said it over and over, Carl. I love Bernie. I love Hillary. And I you know, I've defended both of them. And as someone, as we've talked about today, who lost my first loved one to AIDS, of course I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, Hillary? Like, I was actually on vacation. We were on vacation that week, remember? Mm-hmm. So I didn't. But, you know, of course I mentioned it when I got back. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
But yeah, yes, you're a first lady that was trying to defend another first lady when she died.
Right.
But, you know, and stem cell is absolutely correct.
Right.
That all the Republicans are against Nancy Reagan on stem cell and on science and all, like, you know. But I'm going, no, AIDS, you're incorrect.
This is completely opposite. And, you know, she apologized and everything afterwards and wrote a really great piece on Medium.
Yes.
And for Bernie's part on the other thing.
And everybody, like, know, including Larry Kramer, said that was enough. That was Hillary's explanation was enough.
And it was enough for me because I'm willing to accept that there's a suitable apology for something that's done wrong. When Bernie came around on background checks on guns, even though he has a record, a voting record against background checks by and large, I applaud. I will pat him on the back. I am not going to poke him in the eye because he wasn't right on the issue 100% of the time for his entire career.
Yeah.
In the same way that I don't for Hillary.
Fuck these fucking purity tests, man.
We can't win.
What the
fuck? We cannot win if we expect somebody to have been perfect from the very beginning to the very end because not everybody holds the same views, right? So, you know, Bernie may be perfect right now, but in 5 years, what if he takes a different position on something? You can't throw him out of the movement just because he's not right where you want him to be at any given time. What you've got to do is create the space for him to get to where you want him to be.
Well, that's what I, you know, when he gave the whole you're not qualified if thing, I'm like, well, you've just disqualified President Obama on all these, you know, on all these issues. And
if you say that, let's talk about Obama right now. If you say to Obama, and this is not Bernie saying it, but this is an argumentation thing. If you tell your opponent you're not qualified, how do you ever expect them to trust you to come along to where you want them to be?
Right.
If you want Bernie to be better on guns, you've got to talk to him about the problem of guns.
Talk to him like a person. Talk to him like a fucking person.
If you want Hillary to be better on Wall Street, you've got to talk about the problems with Wall Street. You don't insult somebody because it's the opposition. If you want to win over their voters.
We talked about this with exes. If you call me a cunt, I can't really hear anything else you're saying. You just, it is.
It's better for your own
side. And that's what I've said to Hillary or Bernie supporters. It's how you talk to people. Like, you know, if you're trying to convince them, talk to them like a person that you value.
You cannot tell me you should really be how I want you to be. And if I tell you I'm not there. You can't say, well, you must be paid for. You must be bought.
You must
because
be
first of all,
right.
I'm not getting a check for that, and that's insulting.
Right.
If I can get a check, I'd
happily take
it.
And I'm working in my fucking basement.
I would cash it. but it,
trust me, I love some corporate fucking 1% money. I got none of it.
Or that I live in the Beltway. Okay, fine. Do you know who works for Bernie Sanders?
Yeah.
All of my friends that live inside the Beltway.
Right.
Every single one of the people that send those emails that you get and you give money to worked in politics with me. They worked on Barack Obama's campaign. They worked on Howard Dean's campaign. They worked in the establishment. They ran the DNC's fundraising operation. Their head internet guy ran the SEIU's internet operation. All establishment. But they believe in something.
Right.
You can't throw people out because of where the...
Planned Parenthood. Fantastic. You know, they're not established. I mean, Move On, who endorsed Bernie, is not like... You know, they even talked about, you know, about like... We can't... I can't remember what they were talking about today about this whole thing about they've been shitting on the superdelegates for how long, and now the superdelegates need to do this. It's like, that's not democratic. If she wins pledged delegates and popular vote, that's not democratic to suddenly say,
And there's a reason that the superdelegates have never gone against those things. I'll be the first person to say, we need to get rid of superdelegates. We need to get rid of caucuses. We need to have same-day voter registration.
Yes.
We need to have rotating regional primaries. Get rid of Iowa and New Hampshire. They should have the same opportunity to be first as any other state.
Sure.
Rotate it every 4 years. Make the whole system fair. But don't just tell me that the problem is the one thing that your candidate's not doing well with. And, you know, if Bernie, if the shoe was on the other foot, I wouldn't want Hillary to win with
the
superdelegates.
Me neither. And I was on the other side. I was on Obama's side last time. Are you kidding me? If this had happened last time, I would have been like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Mostly because it would be toxic to the movement. It would be toxic to the party for somebody who did not have the most votes or the most delegates to be selected by superdelegates as as the nominee. Because, I mean, maybe in a scenario where they were within one or two pledged delegates of each other and their vote totals were roughly the same, maybe the superdelegates let them go find it out for the superdelegate endorsements.
Right.
That's the only way I can conceive of it.
Right.
But any other way would be like what we're watching with Trump, right? If they take it away from Trump, their party is going to be split down the middle.
Yeah. This has been such a political nerd fest that I have it's blown my head off. It's just been so enjoyable for me because I'm one of those people. I'm like, did Rachel Maddow or Lawrence O'Donnell say it? Then I didn't hear it. So you and I are political nerds. We're, you know, former Republicans, former straights.
Former. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
It all turned out good.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason that I became a Democrat is not just my sexuality. It's because the party stands for something.
Me too. That's why we did sexy liberal, because we're like, fuck you. We're taking back that word.
If somebody
it's what John F. Kennedy said liberal is. It is good to be a liberal. It means you're empathetic, you're open-minded, you're tolerant, you believe in, you know, not just yourself, but in helping
and
everybody.
Do you notice what you're doing there? You're saying all the things that we are. If you tell me what I'm not, that's not a way to win me over.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm not this, I'm not that, that's not going to encourage me to come join the movement.
Yeah, exactly. Carl, how do we follow you in a creepy...
My name, Carl Frisch, K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H, at anything on social media.
Okay. And that is it. My friend, you are completely sober, and yet this was a complete delight. Love you, Carl Frisch.
Love you, too.